I'm Wade Keller, editor and publisher of the Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter and former host here at PW Torch Livecast. If you're looking for my shows, they have moved as of July 2017. They're now called the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast, available through Podcast One. Enter Wade Keller on your podcast app or iTunes and subscribe to the new Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast, where I cover Raw and my first show of the week, SmackDown, with my second show of the week, and then the flagship edition with a co-host, and we cover a broad array of pro wrestling current events, and then I end the week with a weekly interview. That's the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast, now at Podcast One. Subscribe today. Just search Wade Keller.
Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome everyone to Wrestling Night in America. I am PW Torch columnist Greg Parks, and you are listening to the PW Torch Livecast for Sunday, October 15th, 2017. If I sound a little funny, it's twofold. First of all, I'm not the usual host, Pat McNeil, who is under the weather tonight and will not be joining us. And secondly, I'm also a little under the weather, if you can't tell. I'm fighting a cold, and I will probably be making liberal use of my mute button when I start coughing and hacking, and hopefully I won't transmit much of that over the air, but we'll see what we can do because it is a busy night in professional wrestling, as it always seems to be here on Wrestling Night in America. Glad you could join us if you're listening live, and thanks for tuning us in if you're listening to us on delay. VIP members of PWTorch.com listening to us. Just a lot going on tonight. As we speak, Evolve is holding Evolve 95 in East Haven, Connecticut. And ROH is on iPay-per-view with their Global Wars Chicago show. So those are just two major shows happening as we're recording this on Sunday night, 8 o'clock Eastern. But of course, so much more happening in the world of professional wrestling. Coming up this Sunday is WWE TLC. We've got a big go-home show tomorrow night on Raw, where Roman Reigns will face Braun Strowman in a steel cage match. We're still dealing with the fallout from Hell in a Cell on the SmackDown side of WWE, where this past week on SmackDown, Sami Zayn gave his first interview after helping his longtime friend and nemesis Kevin Owens escape with a win over Shane McMahon in the main event. And this week on SmackDown, Bobby Roode will face Dolph Ziggler in a Hell in a Cell rematch. And also, Lucha Underground going with their Ultima Lucha Trace. It is the final episode of Season 3 coming up this Wednesday night. And, of course, we're also on the road to Bound for Glory, happening in the early part of November for Impact Wrestling. And with Pat not here, helping me talk a little bit about Impact Wrestling side of things. We'll have Mike McMahon, who is standing by with us. Mike, are you there?
I am here. How are you?
I'm doing as well as I can fighting this cold. And, of course, Mike McMahon hosts the Thursday live cast with Andrew Socek every week after Impact, talking about that week's show. So, Mike, I'm glad to have you on here with Bound for Glory coming up, with Impact Wrestling again in a state of flux with ownership and things of that nature. Talk a little bit about this past week's episode of the Thursday Night Livecast with you and Andrew, and get a little plug in here to start things off.
Yeah, we're live every Thursday night at 10 o'clock, right when Impact goes off the air. We usually go for about an hour and a half. We usually fill up the whole 90-minute window, and we're taking calls. So if you want to watch the show and give us a call afterwards, you can certainly do so. And We can also, you can email the show at impactlivecast@gmail.com if you can't get on the phone lines. And, you know, the last couple of weeks, it's kind of been the same. Andrew and I haven't been very big fans of the show the last couple of weeks. This week in particular, we talked a lot about how it seemed like they're using a lot of filler. And our speculation is that they had a lot of stuff planned to hype a Jeff Jarrett versus Alberto El Patron match at Bound for Glory. That's not going to happen now, as you alluded to, with their never-ending state of flux. But, yeah, so this week's episode, we focused a lot on their video packages, which felt like just a lot of filler this week, and like looked like they were trying to maybe stretch out a little bit of what they had in the can, and maybe they didn't have enough footage taped from their last set of television tapings, and I think the canceled match with Jeff out of power probably had a lot to do with it.
And, Mike, I guess I should take the time now. As I said, Pat's the usual host. 515-605-9345 is the number to call to talk here on Wrestling Night in America. And you can also tweet me at Greg M. Parks if you have any questions that you want me to address throughout this show. We've got Mike here for the first half hour or so. And Mike, you talk about the filler that's happened on Impact the last few weeks. It seems a little strange. As you mentioned, there could be reasons for that. But leading up for Bound for Glory, what's your take on how Bound for Glory is shaping up? That takes place, I believe, on November 5th. Yes, November 5th in Ottawa, yes. Ontario, Canada. What's your take on the card as we have it so far?
You know, it's funny. Andrew and I were just talking about that, too, this past week. And Andrew, or my co-host Andrew Socek, has brought it up. You know, Impact's biggest event of the year, their WrestleMania, is Bound for Glory. And the card so far just doesn't feel like what you would expect to be a, you know, superstar card. And I think part of that is their lack of roster depth. And so far what we know after this past week that we'll have Eli Drake defending the global championship against Johnny Impact in a rematch. They fought a couple of weeks ago on Impact. We know that we're going to have LAX versus OVE in a 51-50 street fight, which is also a rematch. They wrestled a couple of weeks ago for the tag titles. And I think that's all that's been officially booked on the show so far. But both of those matches are rematches. So we were talking this week about how it's kind of funny and a little weird that all the matches they've booked so far, and they've, you know, they've hinted at some others, but everything they've bar have been rematches. And really, you know, for their biggest show of the year, we're both fans of Eli Drake. We're both fans of Johnny Impact, Johnny Mundo. But Eli Drake versus Johnny Impact just doesn't feel like it's a big enough main event for your biggest show of the year, especially when you look at the fact that they only run two pay-per-views. But, you know, I think, yeah, it speaks to their lack of star power a little bit on their roster and lack of you know, overall depth. Really, their biggest star is Bobby Lashley, and it seems like he's going to be involved in a pretty big match as well, a tag team match probably involving Moose and Stephen Bonner, who showed up this week on the show, UFC Hall of Famer. But yeah, it's the main event picture for what they've booked so far. I don't know, you know, for something that's supposed to be WrestleMania for them, it just doesn't feel like it's a big enough match, especially where we just saw it 2 weeks ago.
And you actually segued quite nicely into my next question, because last week in the PW Torch newsletter, I wrote a column kind of summing up some of the major storylines in Impact Wrestling as they stand heading into Bound for Glory. And one of the storylines, obviously, is Bobby Lashley and his deal where he's had to choose between MMA and professional wrestling, Impact Wrestling, and it appeared that he chose MMA. And Moose has been sort of, the last few weeks, going to the American Top Team workout facility, and 2 weeks ago it was him getting his butt kicked and thrown out of the building. This week he got some measure of revenge with Lashley not there, but this is a long-term story that Impact Wrestling has told, and I kind of want to get your take on what you think of the MMA invasion, as it were, into Impact Wrestling and how that storyline has progressed from the beginning to where we are now.
I haven't been a huge fan of it. There's been certain elements that I've liked. But the beginning of it, for example, I was really down on. And it was the first night, I believe it was the first night that the American Top Team guys were involved in the show. Tin, who's an MMA fighter with American Top Team, they were doing, you know, clips, interview clips of guys from Impact and guys from American Top Team, just short little sound bites as they were going in and out of breaks. And Kobe Covington said something to the effect of, hey, you know what? I believe the exact quote was, wrestling is what it is, but we're real fighting. We're real fighters. And that just really didn't sit well with me. I don't know why you would go out of your way. I mean, look, everybody knows, but why would you go out of your way on your own television show to tell people that what they're watching, you know, isn't an actual fight? It just didn't make a whole lot of sense to me. And then, you know, overall, I think that the involvement has been okay. Dan Lambert, as a heel manager, has actually been pretty good. I think his overall, yeah, you know, delivery is, I think he gets it. You know, he seems to me like he gets it. He hasn't been putting down, like, he's been a heel in representing Bobby Lashley, but he hasn't been putting down wrestling, whereas some of the MMA guys were definitely, you know, in the we're going to put down wrestling mode, and that's how we're going to get our heat. Some of it at the very beginning also didn't make sense. You know, they had the MMA guys who were just attacking referees at ringside for no reason. it seemed just very weird, kind of forced. And then the middle of it, I think, has been okay. You know, they had some vignettes over the last couple of weeks of Bobby Lashley training with American Top Team and them sort of celebrating that Lashley chose MMA over pro wrestling. And then the last couple of weeks of Moose, I've just found it kind of funny. You know, Andrew and I joked about it on our post-impact livecast 2 weeks ago when Moose went to the American Top Team gym and got beat up by a bunch of MMA guys. You know, we joked like, well, what did he expect? You know, he's walking into a gym full of MMA fighters by himself, and he got jumped and attacked by eight of them and thrown out of the building. So some of it has been, you know, a little weird. I didn't think it made Moose look very good. But overall, I think, you know, it seems like it's heading towards Moose and Stephen Bonner versus Lashley and someone from his gym. The only guy in that gym with pro wrestling experience is King Mo. So that would be my guess. My guess is that it's going to be King Mo and Lashley against Stephen Bonner and Moose. And that should be an attraction, you know, especially – I'll put it this way. They had, you know, they tried to pull in that special attraction match with Slammiversary, bringing in D'Angelo Williams, who didn't look all that bad. But I think that this is probably going to be a bigger attraction for them than that match was. But, you know, it's all relative. What's the bigger attraction? Are we talking, you know, 500 more buys, 700 more buys, 1,000 more buys? You know, it's all relative. I don't think this means they're going to suddenly do, you know, 250,000 pay-per-view buys on the show. But I do think that this match, sure, in particular is a bigger attraction match than what D'Angelo Williams was.
On a bigger picture level, Mike, you know, we've had the situation with Jeff Jarrett stepping down for the time being, apparently going from Global Force Wrestling back to Impact Wrestling again for the time being. Who knows? What's your take on the overall state of Impact Wrestling versus where it was when Jeff Jarrett and GFW first took over? Do you think it's better to have Jarrett out of the picture from a creative standpoint and not have the GFW name associated with it? Or, you know, do you think that's the preferable option to have Jarrett, somebody with his experience in running wrestling companies, and in the wrestling business, having a hand in creative at some point?
I think in the long run, I think they're probably better off with Jeff not involved in creative, only because if I look at some of the creative ideas that they had when they first came in and he was first put in charge, and I wasn't huge fans of it. Make Impact Great Again slogan, just a ripoff of Make America Great Again, which, first of all, I'm not sure how creative that is if it's just a straight ripoff. And also, you know, I kind of felt like you were insulting your fan base a little bit. I mean, look, the show wasn't very good the last couple of years, but you kind of are insulting your fan base that have stuck it out with you, saying we're going to make it great again. What you've been watching for the last few years has been total garbage, but we're going to make it better. You know, they went from over a million viewers on Spike to 300,000 roughly on average now on Pop TV. I kind of felt like they were insulting the people that stuck with them by saying that, hey, we know you've been watching, you know, total garbage, and we're going to clean it up. I just didn't like the narrative there. The overall creative direction, I think from a management standpoint, they made some real big mistakes. Trusting Alberto El Patron as much as they did backfired, certainly, this summer. And it's not like there weren't warning signs. I mean, there were plenty of warning signs with him, you know, individually. And then also Global Force thing, you brought it up. I mean, I kind of made light of it, but Ed Nordholm and Anthem Sports have been telling anybody who will listen for the last 8 months that they own the Hardy's Broken Universe. I mean, he will shout it from a mountaintop that they own that intellectual property. And he may very well be correct, but I do find it funny that they're so concerned with owning that name and owning those trademarks that they didn't even bother, though, to own the name of the show. They said they bought Global Force Wrestling. They renamed the company Global Force Wrestling. And then we find out when Jeff Jarrett gets dismissed, oh, that was never complete. They didn't actually own that. So I did get a little bit of a chuckle out of that. You know, they've been so concerned with the Hardys. Meanwhile, they didn't even bother owning the name of the company before they went ahead and started using it on TV.
It always a state of flux, it seems like, for Impact Wrestling.
Yeah, never
and We seem to be at another crossroads right now. So Bound for Glory, November 5th. Pat McNeil and I will be here doing a post-Bound for Glory Wrestling Night in America live cast that night. So we will be going on the air as soon as Bound for Glory ends. So if you do watch the show, please call in, email us, tweet us your thoughts on that. We're going to take our first break of the show, and when we come back, we'll talk some bigger picture WWE stuff with Mike McMahon, including a look back at Hell in a Cell. So stay tuned here on Wrestling Night in America.
You love pro wrestling podcasts, but you might not have time to listen to all of them. We'll help you decide which ones to listen to and keep you up to date on the ones you're missing at pwpodcasts.com. That website features written recaps of all of the top pro wrestling related podcasts, including Steve Austin, Bruce Pritchard, Edge and Christian, and so on. Check it out. It's pwpodcasts.com, your home for written recaps of all pro wrestling personality hosted podcasts.
Back here on Wrestling Night in America, call-in number is 515-605-9345 to talk anything on your mind in the world of professional wrestling. We're talking it all tonight. We've hit on Impact Wrestling with PW Torch Impact correspondent and live cast co-host Mike McMahon, who's with us for the first half hour. For those just joining us, our usual host, Pat McNeil, is under the weather tonight, so I'm handling all duties related to hosting, and I'm doing that with a pretty nice cold. So bear with me in case I flip the wrong switch here at some point. If you can't call in, tweet me at Greg M. Parks. I've got my Twitter feed up on my laptop, so I'm keeping an eye on that in case you have any questions there. Mike, let's take a look at WWE, something we don't get your opinion on a lot with you covering Impact Wrestling. And looking back at Hell in a Cell, and I posted my Hell in a Cell roundtable review on pwtorch.com earlier today, and there seems to be a lot of differing opinions on the quality of this show. I thought it was a thumbs up. I really liked it. Looking in the PW Torch newsletter from this past week, some low scores from Bruce Mitchell and Wade Keller, and Pat liked it as well. So if you've seen the show, Mike, I'm curious to get your thoughts on Hell in a Cell from last Sunday.
Yeah, I was on, you know, I give a slight thumbs up. I definitely didn't like it. And there were some people that were more down on it than I was. I was down on really one thing in particular. I didn't like the Shane Kevin Owens cage match or the Hell in a Cell match for a couple of different reasons. Some of the risks they took, you know, I know I was listening to you guys after the show last week, and you're talking about how they were sort of walking that line between making people or between being entertaining, but also kind of making people feel uncomfortable. And I thought that parts of it went too far, but more, you know, I was more so down on how it made Kevin Owens look. At the end of the day, he needed help to beat Shane McMahon, and just I just don't think that sends a good message. And then also the follow-up on Tuesday where Sami Zayn in his promo at one point says to Kevin Owens, hey, Kev, you know, you got to admit, he would have had you beat. After he knocked you off the side of the cage and you went through the table, he would have had you beat. But, you know, Shane wanted blood, and he went up and went for the dive off the top of the cage. I was down on that match in particular, but for the most part, you know, I thought the show was a pretty good show. I thought the first Hell in a Cell match between the Usos and New Day was the better of the two Cell matches and a really fun way to open the show for sure.
I thought it was amazing for them to incorporate so many unique moves and situations into Hell in a Cell. It's not easy in 2017 to make a Hell in a Cell match unique and stand out because we've had so many of them. And realistically, the idea is that you're limited with what you can do inside that cell. I know that's not always taken as gospel because you get to see Shane McMahon and Kevin Owens and they fight outside the cell and they do all this kind of stuff. But within the confines of the cell, theoretically, your options are limited. And they were able to bring some hardcore aspects into it to make it unique, and I think to make it stand out. Whenever I look at a show like Hell in a Cell or any WWE pay-per-view in which there is multiple matches with the same stipulation, I look for the matches to be different. How are they different? How do they stand out from one another? And I thought Hell in a Cell, they did a really nice job. You know, inherently it's going to be different because it's a tag match inside of a cell. So it's going to be different right off the bat. But taken as a whole, that was very different than the Kevin Owens, Shane McMahon. I hate to reduce it to a stunt fest, but really that's basically what it was. So they were two very different matches. And in between, I thought Rusev versus Randy Orton was better than I expected. Shinsuke Nakamura versus Jinder Mahal was on the higher end of Mahal matches from my point of view. You know, the women's match was nice. So, I thought this was a strong thumbs up, even though I'm kind of in the same camp as you, Mike, in that I looked at that main event, and to me, yeah, it was dramatic, but I was more worried about the condition of the athletes, Shane McMahon and Kevin Owens, going through that. The drama was more, I hope these guys don't get hurt, than, oh my gosh, is Shane McMahon going to hit his big move and win? And I think that was what hurt the match a little bit for me.
Yeah, I agree. And I also think, you know, it's a little unfair, I think, to these guys, in this case, Kevin Owens, in that, you know, Shane can do a big dive off the top of the cage because he doesn't have to wrestle on Tuesday. And he didn't have to wrestle this weekend on house shows, and Kevin Owens does. So part of the thing, and look, I get it, man is the babyface, Kevin Owens is the heel, Shane in this context is supposed to be the hero, but I thought it made Kevin Owens look really weak, that not only did he need help from Sami Zayn to win the match, but while Shane just jumped off of the top of the cage, you know, really without any reservation, there was a spot earlier in the match where Kevin Owens had Shane on a table on the outside and it sort of looked like he was going to make that dive a couple of times, but didn't. And it was played up as he's too afraid to make that jump. So I thought, you know, you made Kevin Owens look weak in the sense that he needed help to get the win. You made Kevin Owens look, you know, weak in the sense that he's more of a coward than Shane McMahon. And part of this, like I'll admit, part of this I might be blinded by the fact that I'm just not a very big Shane McMahon fan in terms of his involvement in the show. But I thought that those two things in particular, combined with the fact that, like you said, you just hope that these guys are okay. Because even though Kevin Owens wasn't jumping off the top of the cage, there was still plenty of risk involved in the things that he was doing. So there were portions of the match that I thought were uncomfortable. And just the way the finish came across, the finish was interesting. Don't get me wrong. It was definitely an interesting finish, and it made me excited to watch SmackDown on Tuesday just to see, you know, what is Sami Zayn going to say. But the finish took me out. The finish of the main event took me out of it a little bit just because I'm not a big fan of Shane McMahon's involvement. I think I know why they felt they needed to do it. They have a pretty weak world title picture on SmackDown, and I think that they felt they needed something else to headline the show. But, you know, I just wish that there was – I wish that they spent time building up other guys or that there was someone else they could go to that wasn't Shane McMahon. You know, Wade said it on his podcast this week. It should be the AJ Styles show. You know, that should have been AJ Styles' spot. I completely agree with him.
Moving over to the Raw brand, we've got TLC coming up in a week. And the big news there is The Shield and their reformation to take on Miz and others at TLC. Is this a WWE last gasp attempt to get Roman Reigns over as a babyface? Is it the right time for a Shield reunion because it's sort of the dead zone? We're past SummerSlam, but we're not ready to build for WrestleMania, and this is just something to do to get us to the Royal Rumble or Survivor Series or whatever the next signpost is. In your opinion, for the build, or is it none of those? You know, what's your take on the Shield reunion and what that's meant for Raw?
I totally think this is a last-ditch effort to get Roman Reigns over as a babyface. You know, they might not see it that way, but this is the last chance they have. If he's not going to get cheered right now, he's never getting cheered. It's just not going to happen. It's kind of funny. I don't think that they would have done this if it weren't for the reaction that the Seth Dean reunion right before SummerSlam got. I went to that Raw in Boston, the go-home Raw to SummerSlam. That was the show where Seth and Dean finally, you know, they finally touched fists in the ring, and the place went bonkers. I mean, it was one of the biggest reactions of the night. So I think that saw that. I mean, if that didn't get the reaction that it did, I don't think that the Shield reunion right now is happening. But I also don't think, you know, if Roman Reigns isn't going to get cheered right now, I don't know any other scenario in which they can make it work unless, you know, they were to turn him heel first, give him a long heel run, make people care about him, and then, you know, when you make that flip back to babyface, I think it could work at that point. But right now, I mean, this feels like it's a last-ditch effort, because I don't know what would work if this doesn't.
One of the other big news stories looking at TLC is the debut of Asuka on the main roster, and she will be facing Emma. What are your predictions, dreams, wishes, hopes, fears for Asuka on the main roster?
You know, I don't really know. I'm willing to see where they go with it. I think it's going to be interesting to see what type of path they put her on. I like the idea. I mean, I don't know how you feel about it. I like the idea of her going up against Emma in that first match, only because I think, you know, Emma's going to give her a really good match. So it's going to be a good first impression. She's obviously going to win. They still have the story of the streak to tell, and I don't know, you know, I think it's going to be interesting to see if they put her on the path that they did, with Nia Jax, where they kind of just had her squash people for a little bit. Not, you know, I don't think she's going to squash Emma, but, you know, quick wins, 3 to 4 minutes over some of the less established people in that women in that division. Now, the problem is there's not many of those, so I don't know,
yeah.
You know, that
you can only
is a very long
so
path. Yeah, exactly. You know, do they sort of build her up? And they could stretch it out if they do it over a course of pay-per-views as opposed to, you know, weekly on Raw. Okay, so TLC, she gets Emma. And then the next one, she gets, you know, pick your next wrestler that she's going to go over in 4 to 5 minutes of the next pay-per-view and sort of build one match at a time. Or do they just throw her into the fire, give her one match against Emma, give her some other, you know, convincing wins on Raw, and then we get to the Royal Rumble and she's challenging for the Raw Women's title. I think they could go either way. I really don't know which way they'll go. I'm kind of interested in seeing what they decide to do here, though, because the last couple of wrestlers that they have built up more slowly, Braun Strowman obviously being the biggest example of all, it seems to have worked out when they've taken that slower path as opposed to the, hey, he's on the main roster now, and or he or she's on the main roster now, and we're just going to push him right to the top. You know, and the slower path seems to have worked better than the push him right to the top model, at least it seems to have.
And Brock Lesnar, the Universal Champion, not slated for TLC. In the network era, Mike, how much is that a problem, if at all, that you don't have the champion on one of these lesser pay-per-views?
You know, I don't think it's a problem. You know, obviously, like in the pay-per-view days, it would have been a big issue. But right now, yeah, there's so many people that are that $9.99 is just rolling over month to month. It doesn't matter who's on the show. You know, maybe I'm naive, maybe I'm wrong, but I don't think that there's a large number of people out there that are going, well, I'm going to cancel my subscription this month because I'm not into the paper. I'm not into TLC. But the next month, if they give me something I am interested in, I'll activate my subscription again. And it's kind of funny because, honestly, speaking for me personally, like other than the pay-per-views, there's not a ton on the network that I watch with any sort of regularity. I mean, there's none of their original programming is like, well, going out of my way to watch. Well, NXT. NXT is an exception. But it's kind of funny, you know, I've never once considered, hey, maybe I'll let this go for a month because, you know, I'm not really into the pay-per-view. It rolls over. It's $9.99. It goes to my credit card statement every month. And I feel like a lot of people are in my position where it's just rolling over. So they don't really, they don't really have that pressure to put Brock on the, I mean, Brock, there's dates that he's restricted by anyway, but I don't think they're really feeling the pressure because they're getting that $9.99 from the majority of the subscribers, no matter what, as long as there's a show.
Yeah. Well, Mike, I appreciate you joining me on short notice tonight. Before you go, plug everything you do on the Torch.
All right. So I cover Impact Wrestling on Thursday nights. You can follow my live report at pwtorch.com. And then Andrew Socek and I host the Post Impact Livecast right here on pwtorchlivecast.com. We go live at 10 p.m. every Thursday night, 10 p.m. Eastern every Thursday night. As soon as Impact goes off the air, we usually go for about an hour and a half. And then for VIP members, Andrew and I, the last month or so, have been doing a 20 to 30 minute VIP after show. We've been doing pay-per-view picks, talking some WWE, some bigger picture stuff. We usually get away from Impact on the after show. So you can check all that out.
Awesome. Well, I appreciate you again calling in and helping me out, Mike. And you have a fine rest of the evening.
Thanks. Yeah, that was fun. You too.
PWTorch.com contributor Mike McMahon here joining us on Wrestling Night in America. We'll take another break, and we'll be back with your phone calls. And if you're thinking about calling in, we've got an hour left in the show, folks. And I don't know that I have an hour left in my voice with this call. So call in with any questions, comments, concerns in the professional wrestling industry that you may have that we can address here for you on Wrestling Night in America. We'll be back right after this.
We know you're a pro wrestling fan, but you might like MMA too. And if so, check out our sister site, MMATorch.com, with live fight event coverage, including UFC pay-per-views, previews of all UFC and Bellator events, the daily news digest, exclusive columns, flashbacks, and much more. Check it out. If you're a fan of MMA, you'll be a fan of MMATorch.com.
This is Wrestling Night in America. For Sunday, October 15th, 2017, I'm your host, Greg Parks. Usual host, Pat McNeil, under the weather tonight, so I am going solo. We just had Mike McMahon on talking Impact Wrestling. He is the PWTorch.com Impact reporter and person of record for Impact, as he also, as he mentioned, co-hosts the PWTorch livecast after Impact with Andrew Socek. And if you're thinking about going VIP, pwtorch.com/govip, you can get all kinds of crazy audio, historical content from PW Torch and pwtorch.com. It is well worth the money, pwtorch.com/govip. We're going to go to the phones here with the first phone call of the evening, and it is the 845 area code. 845, you're on Wrestling Night in America. You're on the air. Is now off the air. So we're going to talk a little bit about NXT and with the big NXT show coming up. It is War Games and WWE breaking out War Games for NXT. Kind of an interesting situation there. A lot of people are probably unhappy that WWE isn't using it for a main roster show. I wouldn't completely rule it out in the future, though. I think that if you have a successful War Games, and granted, NXT kind of putting themselves behind the eight ball here to begin with, because they're doing it in a non-traditional War Games. What the matches that made War Games War Games, the matches that made War Games successful, they're going against that grain a little bit with what they've set up for that show. So it may not be of the same quality that we're used to, but if it is successful, I think we could see it transferred to the main roster. And we've seen WWE now labeling one of their upcoming house shows in November Starrcade. So at least for the time being, and knowing Vince McMahon, this is the kind of thing that can change week to week, day to day. His use of the WCW intellectual property, the trademarks, the copyrights, the ownership that WWE has over some of WCW's more successful, more well-known names, like Starrcade, like War Games, seem to be more open to using those right now. And I think that's a good thing when you've got WWE pay-per-views like Great Balls of Fire. And, you know, obviously WWE scraping the bottom of the barrel for some of these concepts. And you have some WCW concepts or names that still work. They are not going to bring back WCW fans. No one is going to confuse the marketplace and think, oh my gosh, WCW is back. They're using Halloween Havoc or something like that. That's not going to happen. But when WWE has these in their back pocket to use, I think it would be pretty smart to do so, especially, again, given the options that WWE has had in the past for pay-per-view names and the like. So, that is something to look forward to. NXT weekly television really doing well, I think, lately. You know, they had a really strong, pun intended, I guess, Roderick Strong, Drew McIntyre title match a few weeks ago, really working toward finding an opponent for Kairi Sane for the next TakeOver show involving all the women, which has been nice to see. You're seeing the Undisputed Era, whether you like the name or not, Adam Cole, Bobby Fish, Kyle O'Reilly, making their presence known on NXT television. We've had the debut of Lio Rush now on TV, so that's going to add some athleticism to the show. Velveteen Dream has a unique gimmick that I think is out there for WWE and for NXT, which I think is a good thing. I think if booked correctly, those kinds of characters are good. You know, you can have the usual suspects, the Drew McIntyres, the guys like that, but it really is the uniqueness of the characters that sets pro wrestling apart. And I point to Bray Wyatt, although I know that thing to do because Bray Wyatt is not a terribly well-booked character as far as keeping interest going in him. But when he first burst onto the scene, that was a really unique idea. And there were a lot of ways WWE could have taken that character. And we've seen WWE take that character a number of different directions. Not all of them have been good. In fact, most of them probably aren't good, but it's that effort. It's that thinking outside the box mentality. You can have a guy with a regular Joe name, like a Drew McIntyre, without much of a character. Hey, Drew McIntyre's the Scottish guy. He's a babyface. He fights for the title. You know, you need those kind of wrestlers to show grounded. But on the other hand, your Velveteen Dreams, your even Aleister Blacks, that create a sense of intrigue and a sense of mystery. I think you need those characters in professional wrestling. They're good for pro wrestling. And, I'm not saying take it all the way to the other end, which is what we had in the mid-90s with Skinner and Duke the Dumpster Drosy and, you know, Dr. Isaac Yankum DDS and those kinds of characters. I think that's WWE taking it too far to one side and focusing too much on the gimmick and not enough on the character, because I think there is a difference between those two. You have Aleister Black, who's more of a character. Velveteen Dream, maybe more of a gimmick. But it's closer to that melding point of character and gimmick than, say, an Isaac Yankem was. And I think that's where Velveteen Dream so far has been successful, in my opinion. Certainly still a lot to go and a lot to see from him before we can make any kind of judgment on that. So we'll continue to keep an eye on him as we head toward TakeOver. So we have the War Games match, which has not been made on TV yet, I don't think. But it's pretty well known if you're following wrestling. Drew McIntyre will be defending the NXT Championship on the show. I'll try not to get too much into spoilers and talking about TakeOver as it comes up in November prior to the Survivor Series. And we've got a couple of other singles matches, one or two that you can guess the direction based on TV thus far, one or two probably still up in the air. This is not a TakeOver based on the title match and based on some of the undercard matches that I think it's not a WrestleMania season type TakeOver. I think the interest is going to be there basically for the War Games match, and people are going to tune in for that, and that has their interest. But I don't think the way it's shaping up right now and the matches that have been announced through the last set of tapings, not the airings, but the tapings, it doesn't strike me as a show that is really strong as far as drumming up interest. But, you know, depending on how things go, depending on how the hype is on TV in the next few weeks, that could certainly change. And, We'll look forward to the next few weeks of television. Drew McIntyre as NXT champion, taking the throne from Bobby Roode. He's in a really good position right now. He came back to NXT, came back to WWE with a lot of fanfare from the independent scene, where he really made a name for himself in Evolve and even in Impact Wrestling at the time. Came back with so much momentum in NXT compared to when he left as part of, you know, three-man band. And I think he's done well so far as NXT champion. I like what I've seen from him. I think, and I won't get into the match because it hasn't been announced on TV yet, but I think the match he has for TakeOver is going to be a really interesting opponent for him. I'm interested to see the dynamics of that matchup and how things go between the belts, because I think that could be a really fun styles clash in a good way. So I'm certainly looking forward to that. And, you know, you have some guys on the roster who are, you know, the up-and-coming guys like Velveteen Dream, the Street Profits. Whether or not you like the gimmick, they're getting over. Lars Sullivan is doing a successful job with what he's been asked to do. So NXT has some really promising wrestlers in the pipeline coming up, and I'm interested to see where those guys go in the next few weeks and months, and to see what guys get called up. You know, the Authors of Pain haven't been doing much lately on TV. There's speculation that they may be in line for a call-up, you know, possibly to be the end game of the Breezango Fashion File segments, although as successful as those segments have been, you kind of get the feeling that WWE is kind of pushing the ending of those out further and further and further. And they may have an end game in mind, but a lot of what they've been doing lately, as entertaining as it is at times, has seemed like filler segments, mixing in with the Ascension and the kind of back and forth on whether or not the Ascension is the perpetrators and things like that. So certainly some questions there, but you know, the Authors of Pain possibly in a position to get promoted. If you look at the tag team ranks, you've got Sanity, you've got you know, Fish and O'Reilly, if they are a tag team. You know, you've got TM61, who should be coming back from injury here soon. And, of course, Heavy Machinery, Street Profits, as I mentioned. There's some other teams getting some tryouts, I think, on the Florida Loop that could be making some hay. I think Blake and Cutler. Is it Blake and Cutler or is it the? Yeah, I think it's Blake and Cutler that have been working on the Florida Loop. So, you know, they're a possibility to get involved in the tag division. Tino Sabatelli as well with Riddick Moss. They've made some appearances on NXT TV. So, you know, this is a strong roster for NXT. I know that it had lost some buzz there for a while, but I really feel like they're working to get that buzz back. And I think it's been successful. You know, with the addition of McIntyre, with the addition of Lio Rush, with the addition of Adam Cole, Bobby Fish, and Kyle O'Reilly. NXT TV, I won't say it's must-see again like it was for a time, but, you know, it's something that I'm not interested in missing. You know, I think it's been good television, you know, compared to Raw and SmackDown, certainly. Probably some of the best TV that WWE puts out on a weekly basis. So that's something to keep in mind as well. So that's kind of a state of NXT heading into TakeOver in November. We'll take a break here on Wrestling Night in America. Back with your phone calls. 515-605-9345 is the number to call. You can find me on Twitter at Greg M. Park. Shoot me a question or comment for me to discuss here for the rest of the evening. So stay tuned.
Hey, it's Jim Valley. If you cut promos in front of a mirror, if you made a belt out of cardboard, if your parents knew to leave you alone when wrestling was on TV, then this is the show for you. Wrestling Road Stories with Jim Valley. We'll talk about and to the stars that made your childhood great. From the WWWF to WWE, WCW, Crockett, Memphis, Florida, Mid-South, and Portland, we'll talk about the unbelievable stories of running the roads and keeping kayfabe, and who knows, some of the stories might even be true. Join me Wednesdays, 5 p.m. Eastern, 2 p.m. Pacific in the United States, Wrestling Road Stories here on the Pro Wrestling Torch Livecast with me, Jim Valley.
Back here on Wrestling Night in America, Greg Parks here with you, PW Torch columnist, and going solo tonight. My usual host, co-host, feeling a little under the weather, so we're going to let him free his mind of the obligations of the live cast tonight, and hope he'll be back with us next Sunday night. Of course, next Sunday, we'll be coming at you following the Tables, Letters, Chairs pay-per-view that WWE will be putting on, so that will probably be somewhere in the neighborhood of 11 o'clock Eastern. We'll be on the air, taking your phone calls, your thoughts on the TLC pay-per-view. And then after that, I think we're back to a normal schedule for a week, and then we'll be doing Bound for Glory, Impact Wrestling, one of their few pay-per-views that they run now. We'll be doing the post-show for that as well, and that will come, again, at 11 o'clock Eastern. On evenings that there is no pay-per-view, you can find me and Pat right here at 8 o'clock Eastern on Wrestling Night in America every Sunday night on PW Torch Livecast. So we're talking everything and anything in professional wrestling here. At the outset, I talked with Mike McMahon, PWTorch.com contributor, focusing on Impact Wrestling. We previewed Bound for Glory, talked about Hell in a Cell. Mike gave his opinions on that show from last week, and also talked a little bit about the upcoming TLC pay-per-view. That pay-per-view, only a few matches have been announced. We'll get more, no doubt, this Monday as Roman Reigns takes on Braun Strowman in a steel cage match this Monday night on Raw. So WWE really putting the big guns forward with Strowman versus Reigns this Monday night from Portland, Oregon. The matches announced for TLC are Alexa Bliss versus Mickie James in a women's championship match, The Shield, taking on Braun Strowman, The Miz, Cesaro, and Sheamus in a TLC match. Asuka versus Emma, and Kalisto versus Enzo Amore in a singles match for the Cruiserweight Championship. And looking at this card, it's not particularly strong unless you're really high on the Shield reunion, which I think WWE is probably banking on a lot of people tuning in to see that. There's been a lot of interest in the live crowd, certainly, on Raw when they've teased Dean Ambrose and Seth Rollins getting together first and then teasing Roman Reigns coming aboard as well. So it's been successful in that avenue. And, you know, a lot of big names teamed up here on the heel side. You've got Cesaro and Sheamus, The Miz, and Braun Strowman as it stands now, a 4-on-3 handicap match. Who knows if a babyface will be added, you know, certainly with Jason Jordan and The Miz going at it. You can see Jason Jordan perhaps added on the babyface side tomorrow with, you know, Jeff Hardy and Matt Hardy had a feud with Cesaro and Sheamus. With Jeff Hardy out of commission, perhaps Matt Hardy will join up with the Shield. Certainly he's got experience in TLC matches. So that isn't out of the realm of possibility, or they could just go into the show with a 4-on-3 handicap match and wrestle from there. But certainly on the heel side, Braun Strowman, The Miz, Cesaro, and Sheamus, again, some of the bigger-named heels. Strowman, they've done a nice job, and one of my concerns with him losing at No Mercy to Brock Lesnar was that he would lose some steam. WWE had done such a fantastic job of building up Braun Strowman as this monster, and for him to not only lose, but lose in the way he did against Brock Lesnar in relatively unceremonious fashion, made me wonder if that momentum was going to go poof and disappear. And WWE followed that on subsequent Raws with very strong showings for Strowman. So I can sit here 2-3 weeks later and say, Strowman really didn't lose much, I don't think, in the end, from losing to Brock Lesnar. Certainly, WWE's priority, keeping Lesnar in a position where he will defend, probably, the Universal title at WrestleMania against Roman Reigns, wanting to keep Lesnar strong. And I think if there was any question as to whether or not WWE had decided to change those plans, I think those went out the window when Lesnar beat Strowman the way he did at No Mercy. So Strowman coming back strong here against the Shield. The Miz has been doing great work as per the usual on Raw. Cesaro and Sheamus have been amazing as a tag team. I love their story from the time they got together as sort of odd couple partners and then eventually learning how to get along. And they've done a fantastic job. It'll be interesting to see how the heel team congeals, how they set together as a team. We'll see if there's any strategy sessions, any segments with them together this week on Raw. See if WWE hints at any kind of dissension before the show. Certainly a lot of egos there. Braun Strowman doesn't seem to play well with anyone. The Miz has his ego, and Cesaro and Sheamus, how those heel pieces all fit together in the lead up to TLC, and whether or not they can coexist throughout the entirety of the match. That's going to be a question. And I think you have to ask the same question with the babyface side, with the Shield. Dean Ambrose, Roman Reigns, and Seth Rollins have not teamed together as a threesome for a long time. Is there still hard feelings from Roman Reigns' side as far as what Seth Rollins did when he turned on Ambrose and Reigns? Ambrose appears to have been able to set that aside for now. But that's the kind of thing that festers, and that's the kind of thing that rears its ugly head at the most inopportune times. And that inopportune time coming up for the Shield would be this coming Sunday at TLC. You know, there's a lot of moving parts. It's a 4-on-3 match, a lot of weapons involved. It will be a fracas. And these are the moments where a swinging steel chair can hit the wrong person, where punches can go awry. And if and when that happens and those miscommunications occur, can the babyface team keep it together? And that's something that I think we'll be looking at perhaps as soon as tomorrow night on Raw. Again, you know, you'll be looking for dissension within the heel team. I think it's fair to ask that same question of the babyface team. Will they show some fraying already of the babyface team, the Shield, heading into TLC tomorrow night on Raw? Certainly a question to be asked, and wondering how the Reigns versus Strowman steel cage match plays into that as well. So that will no doubt be used as a vehicle to plug the main event, or what's presumably the main event at TLC coming up. We also have Alexa Bliss defending her Raw Women's Championship against Mickie James. Nice to see Mickie James being utilized in this position. Seems to be a bit of a placeholder until WWE is ready to pull the trigger on Alexa versus Nia Jax. Certainly, Mickie is a better choice than Emma, better choice than Dana Brooke, Alicia Fox at this stage of the game. You know, you have to look at the storyline from the point of view of the age thing. And I think it makes Alexa a more effective heel because it is such a nasty thing to focus on is someone's age. And, you know, Mickie is older than some of the women. And I think that's, you know, I hear a lot of people saying, well, at Mickie's age for a man, no one's going to make that comparison for a man. By the same token, you have a lot of more men wrestlers that are around the same age as Mickie. So it doesn't stand out as much. With the women you have on the WWE women's roster, especially on the Raw side, Mickie's age does stand out. She is a lot older than some of the other women, especially Alexa Bliss. So that age discrepancy stands out more for the women because there are fewer wrestlers Mickie's age than it would for the men who, you know, a lot more of the men are around Mickie's age. There's a lot less discrepancy. So I don't find it as offensive them focusing on the age thing as much as some other people do. I get why there's some hesitancy to embrace this storyline. But, you know, I think it makes Mickie sympathetic. I think it makes Alexa out to be the mean girl heel that fits perfectly with her character. And it's certainly a lot more creative than just throwing Mickie James out there without a story to challenge for the title in a way that, you know, you don't feel like she really has a chance over Alexa. Given this storyline, I think it makes it feel like she has more of a chance. Because you're looking at the payoff, you know, is Mickie going to prove to Alexa that age is just a number, at least for Mickie James, and that her age isn't stopping her from doing anything? You know, that would be a very nice lesson to come out of this storyline. And will WWE go forward with it? And Alexa's reign, we know they've been doing a little bit of hot potato with some of the titles lately. Could that be in store for Alexa on Sunday? I don't think so. But at least they've planted that seed now. And it's not just Mickie being brought up from the depths of the Raw Women's Division to challenge because there was really no one else. You know, they've got a really solid story to go along with it. Speaking of the women, Asuka taking on Emma in Asuka's debut. I thought it was odd that so many of the women were fighting for a chance to face Asuka. You know, you would think that that would not be a position that many of the women would want. And certainly, I didn't think it helped Asuka's aura to have all these women wanting to fight her. But Emma kind of getting the fluke victory. Look, she doesn't need to be built up to face Asuka. She doesn't need to be built up with victories on Raw after Raw to make her seem like a legitimate contender to beat Asuka. No. Asuka's going to come in and she's going to destroy Emma, and that's going to be it. And there's really no need to build Emma up. You know, I didn't really even think there was a need to have her win a match to face Asuka. I think that could have been something that you could have just said Asuka will be in action at TLC and Emma is already in the ring. Like, there's really no need to build her up because no one is going to have the idea that Emma's going to win, and she's not going to win. So why spend the TV time doing that? Now, certainly, you know, if you want Emma to be a player in the title picture going forward after this, then yeah, you know, a couple wins on TV leading up to her match with Asuka could do her some good. I don't get the sense that that's the direction they're going with her, but she will be facing Asuka in a singles match. It'll be interesting to see what Asuka brings to the table at TLC. And the other match announced, Kalisto defending his newly won Cruiserweight Championship against Enzo Amore. Kalisto should have been in the Cruiserweight division from Jump Street. I mean, there was no reason for him not to be a part of the Cruiserweight division. I'm glad that he's finally there. I don't know if it took Neville walking out to make it happen or if this was in the plans all along. He's just been so defined down in the heavyweight division that I don't think it speaks well of the entirety of the Cruiserweight division to have him on top right now. It's just, he's not a strong presence, and it feels like the Cruiserweight division is getting the heavyweight division's leftovers. It feels like Kalisto couldn't hang in the heavyweight division, so now he's the star of the cruiserweight division. And that doesn't speak well of the cruiserweights. And this is a division that needs all the help it can get. Enzo has been their standard bearer for a few weeks, and he's a guy that was basically chased out of the heavyweight division as well, losing to Cass over and over again and basically being a joke of a wrestler. And yet he was able to beat Neville for the cruiserweight title. And now here's Kalisto as champion, facing Enzo Amore for the cruiserweight championship. I just don't think having these two guys be the representatives of the cruiserweight division really speaks well to the division as a whole. Just based on how they were booked in the heavyweight division and now expecting people to get excited about them on the top of the cruiserweight division, it's kind of an unfortunate situation there for the cruiserweight. So four matches on the books for TLC coming up next Sunday night. Obviously more to come probably tomorrow night on Raw. Some directions will be set there. Coming up, we will talk about Lucha Underground, something that doesn't get a lot of pub anymore. We will be talking about that, taking your phone calls, taking your tweets, and all that jazz. So, that's coming up right after this.
Rich Van, formerly of the Primetime Friday Laughcast with Bruce Mitchell here. I want to tell you about my new show, The Deep Dive with Rich Van. On Saturdays at 6 p.m. Eastern weekly, join us as we dive into a single subject, some weeks as serious as race, gender, and stereotyping in wrestling, to as fun as which IC champs could fit into another era, and anything in between. We'll have guests from inside and outside the Torch family to cover the subject of the week, and of course your calls and emails. Prior to each episode, I'll put out on social media the subject and some notes, places where you can also bone up on the subject of the week if you're so inclined. I'll also devote shows to two of my favorite international promotions, New Japan Pro Wrestling and Progress. All are welcome. No secret handshakes here because Saturday nights on the live cast are officially all right for diving.
We have a phone call. And I'm sorry I've kept this person waiting in the queue for so long. 814, you are on Wrestling Night in America. Talk to me.
This is Ryan from Cumberland, Maryland. First question I have for you is on TLC. Do you think if they put the Intercontinental title and tag team titles up on top, that would build more interest towards this pay-per-view?
You mean in the TLC match?
Correct, because I don't believe I've ever seen a TLC match where it didn't have any titles holding, because that's the whole purpose of a TLC match is to climb the ladder and get the titles.
Okay, so because it's a 4-on-3 match, would it be just whoever grabs the title wins it? I mean, so the team, you're kind of in a team match, but on the other hand, you're kind of fighting off your teammates to try and get the title, right?
Well, I guess Kurt Angle could cause dissension between Braun and Miz by saying whoever gets the titles gets to pick who the champion, because I saw a match like that over the weekend on the Indies that was sort of like that created dissension between the heels.
Yeah, I think with the Shield reunion and this being their first match back, in addition to it being a TLC match, I think adding the titles to the match would kind of take away from the meaning of the titles. Do you know what I mean? Because the Shield reunion is such a big focus, and that's such a big drawing card to this match. The TLC aspect of it is such a big drawing card. I feel like the titles would almost be in the background if you were to put them in this match.
Okay, yeah, I just don't see the reason for the match then, because I don't think there's been a match so far in WWE. I could be wrong where there's been a TLC match, but no title holding up, because I thought that was the rule of the TLC match.
And there's certainly still time. Something could happen tomorrow night on Raw where, titles are put on the line. But again, I personally, when I'm looking at that match, I think it would kind of take away from all the other moving parts that are going on during that match. I would assume without the ability to grab a title, I would assume the match would just end via pinfall and tables, ladders, and chairs would be involved. So I would assume it would be like any kind of tables match or any kind of chairs match where you have the weapons at your disposal to use them as you see fit, but the match will end when there's a pinfall registered.
Okay. And the other question I have for you is on New Japan. When did that promotion become like a disqualification type? Because I noticed a lot of the wrestlers hit each other with chairs, and there's a lot of interference, but you never see any disqualifications in that. I don't know if there was a time period when that became like that, because New Japan was usually like a real serious federation where that wouldn't be tolerated.
Right. Yeah, I don't know that that's necessarily a hard and fast rule that there's no disqualifications. I know that they do some chicanery, and they can kind of overdo the ref bumps at times and the tricking of the referees and things like that. You know, in the bigger matches, I think there's a lot more leeway given, and I'm going to talk about Lucha Underground here soon, and you'll often hear Matt Stryker on commentary during Lucha Underground say that the referees had been instructed to give a lot of leeway to a certain match or let a lot of things go, which is the explanation for interference or weapons being used without disqualification. And you kind of get that sense in the bigger New Japan matches. They don't necessarily do it a lot on the undercard, but you'll see it in the major matches where, you know, we saw it with Kenny Omega and Okada going through the tables and things like that, normal stuff that you would think would be a disqualification. But in the bigger matches, I don't know if they're ever officially waived in those matches or if it's just kind of like the Lucha Underground rules where they're given a lot more leeway for those kinds of things, especially in championship matches.
Okay. And my final question for you is, who would you put in the Impact Hall of Fame? I know they made a joke about the woman's champion getting in, but I think that was just sort of like making fun of Karen Jarrett. Is there like anyone that you see that's worthy of that honor this year, or do you think it's down the tubes for the Hall of Fame since this new ownership took aboard?
Yeah, that's a good question. You know, James Storm was a name that was thrown out there. I think he's as good a choice as any. You know, when you're looking at the current Impact roster and who you can really induct, obviously guys who were really important like AJ Styles and Samoa Joe, they're out because of their involvement with WWE. Christopher Daniels is out because he's in ROH. The numbers are limited. You know, you could put Abyss in, but he's in the middle of a Joseph Park storyline. So that wouldn't really fit. And James Storm really seems to be the one guy. If you wanted to do Mike Tenay, you could bring Mike Tenay in and induct him. Or, you know, they inducted Earl Hebner in 2015. They could do another non-wrestler like Tenay or like a Jeremy Borash who's been with the company, I think, since the beginning. You know, you could do those guys. Again, the options are really limited given the current roster and their relationship to the lineage and the history of Impact Wrestling. There just are not a lot of choices. You know, James Storm, Mike Tenay, Jeremy Borash, I think, are the three strongest at this point. You know, I guess you could, if you wanted to bring back the Beautiful People, I don't know what kind of relationship they have with Impact Wrestling. I know they're on the roster, off the roster a lot. You know, those are just some names off the top of my head that I can think of. But yeah, they are limited. Anything else, Ryan, before we let you go?
Maybe another thing for you is I noticed Triple H announces when the NXT matches are happening. Is there any possibility that one of the general managers will do that? Because I missed a WWE house show this year because I didn't even know about it. But the one that's NXT, I knew about because Triple H posted it right away and let everyone know about it. So I think they could help their attendance if they did that.
So are you saying that the WWE main roster general manager should post that on social media?
Yeah, either that or Vince McMahon or, you know, Stephanie or Shane, like some sort of authority figure of some sort, just to give fans heads up, because right now I don't think too much promotion goes into the authority figure announcing such a thing.
Yeah, NXT does a really nice job announcing where they're going and when, and Triple H posted on social media. A lot of it is because the places that they go are the first time that NXT has been there. So they want to draw a really nice crowd. They want to get their name out there. They want to get people to know, hey, you can come see NXT live. You know, they haven't, in the relative history of NXT. They haven't been a touring brand, touring in the United States, very long. So there are still places that they haven't been, or maybe places that they're only hitting for a second time now. So it certainly behooves them to get that information out there. With WWE, yeah, I think, especially with the house show attendance as it's been, I think any way you can get that message out there, the better it would be. I don't know how connected the, you know, Kurt Angle or Daniel Bryan or Shane McMahon are to house shows. I don't know if that's on their radar, but certainly, you know, it could be something as simple as WWE saying, hey, we've got these shows coming up. Could you tweet them out? I don't WWE not doing it because they don't want to give people the impression that those people are going to be there, that Kurt Angle and Daniel Bryan and Shane McMahon will be at these shows because they're tweeting about them. But yeah, I think any way WWE can get the word out of house shows, the better, because I think those are really fun experiences. They're really different from TV tapings. I've been to a number of house shows, and it's crazy the difference in the crowd as far as the makeup. A lot more families at house shows, and maybe that's why they don't post it on Twitter and things like that as much, because it draws more of a family crowd, and maybe they think that families aren't necessarily on Twitter as much to do that. But again, I think WWE should be looking at any avenue they can think of to get the word out about house shows in an effort to draw more. So I'd like to see them explore some different avenues and maybe some outside the box thinking.
Yeah, it was actually Indiana, PA, which was the first time for WWE to be in the history. So I think that's what threw me off, that there'd even be a show there. But I found out through, like, Dave Meltzer, he was looking for reports for it, and that's how I found out. But it was too late then already, because the show was over by then.
Yeah. Yeah, that's something WWE could certainly work on. Ryan, thanks for calling in. Appreciate you taking some of the pressure off me, as I'm afraid I'm going to lose my voice for the last part of this show, but I'll keep trucking. Thanks for calling in.
Yeah, thanks for taking the call.
Sure thing. So that was Ryan calling in, and the phone lines are open for the next 15 minutes or so. 515-605-9345 is the number to call in. To get you on the air. Also, tweet me any questions you might have at Greg M. Parks. After our break, we're going to talk about Lucha Underground, Ultima Lucha Trace. The final episode will be coming up this Wednesday on the El Rey Network. There's been four parts to Ultima Lucha Trace so far. A season four has not been announced yet. It's still up in the air, but it's possible. It's possible. But if they do it, the roster might look a lot different. We're seeing guys on Impact Wrestling, rumors that Ricochet is heading to WWE, and he's a major player in Lucha Underground as Prince Puma. So I think Lucha Underground could possibly look very different if it does return for a fourth season, which, again, is no guarantee. And I'll be writing about Lucha Underground in next week's Torch newsletter. I'll be penning a column for that, sending that in tomorrow, and that will be in the PW Torch newsletter for VIP members in next week's newsletter. So stay tuned after this break for more Wrestling Night in America.
Don't just listen to PW Torch's brand of wrestling coverage. Read it, too, every day at pwtorch.com. Join me Monday nights for my live coverage of Raw, Tuesday nights for my live coverage of SmackDown, Sunday nights for my live coverage of WWE pay-per-views, and keep up on the news and read exclusive editorials and special features every day at pwtorch.com.
Five one five six zero five nine three four five is the number to call here on Wrestling Night in America. I am PW Torch columnist Greg Parks, flying solo this evening as my usual host slash co-host Pat McNeil, also a PW Torch columnist, is taken ill this weekend. So I will see us to the end here for another 15 minutes or so on the live cast, trying to get through with my own cold, but Pat certainly in more dire straits than I was this weekend. So taking the ball and running with it here as best I can. I'm talking a little bit of Lucha Underground now, as their third season comes to a close this Wednesday with part four of Ultima Lucha Trace. And that show will see Matanza Cueto take on El Dragon Azteca Jr. in a steel cage match. It will see Cage versus Jeremiah Crane versus Mil Muertes in a Gauntlet of the Gods three-way match. And it will also see in the main event for the Lucha Underground Championship in a title versus career match, Johnny Mundo against Prince Puma. Johnny Mundo, of course, will also be wrestling for the Impact Wrestling title at Bound for Glory in November. So his status with Lucha Underground certainly in question, as is Prince Puma's, as is so many more. Jeremiah Crane is another one who's rumored to be going to Impact Wrestling. We've also seen Tejano. We've already seen some other guys from Lucha Underground in Impact Wrestling. So it's going to be interesting. The contract situation with Lucha Underground is just so unique. It's hard to really predict whether these guys are going to be let out of these contracts, when season four is going to start filming, if it does. There's just so much up in the air. And I feel for the wrestlers. I really do, because the contracts they signed are so unique. And to be in this situation where you don't know if there's going to be a season four, you don't know if your contract is going to roll over for another season, and you're kind of in a holding pattern. If you've got WWE interested in you, if you've got Impact Wrestling interested in you, and with Impact maybe things have changed now because there are so many Lucha Underground wrestlers in Impact, and the people in charge of Lucha Underground are sort of relaxing their rules about where these guys can wrestle just because, season three was taped about a year ago, I think, and it's just now airing. So it's a tough spot for these wrestlers. And without knowing about season four, and even if there is a season four, without knowing the financials, and if Lucha Underground is going to be able to keep some of these guys that they have under contract and keep them for a season four. So it's a really distressing situation, I imagine, for a lot of these wrestlers. As we look back at Ultima Lucha Trace, though, certainly we've seen some standout matches. We've seen some crazy matches. Dr. Wagner Jr. defeating Tejano, along with Dr. Wagner and Famous B defeating Tejano in a 2-on-1 handicap match in Ultima Lucha Trace Part 1. We also had Killshot defeating Dante Fox in a Hell of War match, which was absolutely insane. One of the most brutal matches I've seen on television. That was 25 minutes, blood, guts. It was not for everybody. And if you're one of those people who watched Hell in a Cell and said, the lack of blood is taking me out of the moment, if you're one of those people who doesn't like that WWE has scaled back significantly on the blood that they use in their matches, go out of your way to watch Killshot versus Dante Fox, because that should satisfy you for a long time. It was hard to watch at times. But a Hell of War match, I guess, is lived up to its name. Ultima Lucha Trace Part 2 the following week saw the Mac win a very short battle royal for an ultimate opportunity, which ended up occurring in the next episode. But that had a lot of lower card guys, Joey Ryan, Mala Suerte, Pimpinela Escarlata made his return, Vinny Massaro, Ricky Mandel, guys like that, some of the lower card guys, and the Mac, standing out there. I guess you could say Paul London, PJ Black, also guys that you thought would have had a chance to win, but the Mac really stood out head and shoulders above a lot of those guys as the one that you would imagine winning that match. Ivelisse defeated Katrina in a singles match on part two of Ultima Lucha Trace. First time we'd seen Ivelisse in the ring in quite some time on Lucha Underground. And you also had Phoenix defeating Marty the Moth Martinez in a mask versus hair match. Mariposa, Marty the Moth's sister, turned on him and helped Phoenix pick up the victory, and also helped Phoenix and Melissa Santos cut Marty the Moth's hair to end the show. Blood again. if you like blood, if you like somebody licking somebody else's blood, you'll like that match. So Phoenix beat Marty the Moth in a mask versus hair match. Part three saw a Sexy Star defeat Taya, and looking at the scorecard here, Dante Fox, Killshot and the Mac defeated the Snake Tribe in a trios match for the Lucha Underground Trios Championship. So the Mac, his opportunity that he won in the Battle Royal was to challenge for the Lucha Underground Trios Championship, but the kicker was that he had to team with Dante Fox and Killshot, not only team with two guys who had just been through a Hell of War match 2 weeks prior, but also team with these guys who are bitter enemies. They were friends at one time, but had gone through that match and had just absolutely destroyed each other. So the Mac had to put up with two teammates who weren't terribly fond of each other at the time. Ultimately, they did defeat the Snake Tribe for the Trios Championship. And finally, Pentagon Dark over Son of Havoc for the Gift of the Gods Championship in a ladder match. So again, coming up this Wednesday, Matanza Cueto against El Dragon Azteca Jr. in a steel cage. Cage versus Jeremiah Crane versus Mil Muertes in a Gauntlet of the Gods three-way match. And Johnny Mundo versus Prince Puma in a title versus career match. Now, we haven't talked much about Lucha Underground on this show in the past. And, you know, it's kind of sad to see because Lucha Underground debuted with a lot of fanfare. The first season was critically acclaimed. It was certainly different from anything and everything that we had come to know as far as the presentation of professional wrestling on TV. And fans were excited about the direction of the show, the talent that was involved. Some of the best talent of any company in the world, really, when you look at it. And then they just kind of fell off the map. They weren't able to capitalize. They lost Spanish language television, which really hurt their numbers because they were outdrawing El Rey on that. El Rey has stuck with them more than almost any network would, I think. Robert Rodriguez, the head of El Rey Network, is I think, a big fan of Lucha Underground and what it brings to the network. So he's stood by it perhaps longer than some would have. But there really doesn't seem to be a lot of growth. And it's hard to believe that a company with national television distribution, even though El Rey Network is not nearly a network on the level of a USA Network or even a Pop TV, is in this situation. Because we've always said that you can't be a viable alternative to WWE, to Impact Wrestling, without having a national television outlet. And here Lucha Underground is. They have a national television outlet. But there doesn't seem to be the capitalization on it. They're not doing house shows. They're not really heavily pushing merchandise. I mean, you look at the Bullet Club and being in Hot Topic and that being such a major seller. You know, I could see Lucha Underground merchandise selling in a Hot Topic type store, and we just haven't seen that kind of distribution. They haven't had the characters or the storylines that have really caught the attention of the mainstream viewers, even WWE or Impact viewers or whatever wrestling viewers, fans of other companies that may sample Lucha Underground to say, I'll check it out and see what they have to offer. Whatever Lucha Underground is doing is really not hooking those fans. And they lost a lot when they crowned Sexy Star as the champion. And I know that was a very controversial decision. I know the blood is a turnoff for a lot of people. I know that the man-on-women violence is a turnoff for a lot of people. So, Lucha Underground has been this niche within a niche product, and that's really hampered their ability to grow. Unfortunately, because I do think that you know, it would be great for something the level of Lucha Underground to succeed, especially with the creative leaps of faith that they take. For me, I know it's a little complicated to understand at times, with the mysticism and you know, going into the realm of, you know, the realms that Lucha Underground goes into. It's kind of hard to keep some of the stuff straight and who's dead and who's alive and who's doing all this stuff. So it's not very welcoming for a new viewer. It's not something that I feel like if I was a new viewer trying to sample Lucha Underground and I just tuned in the middle of a season, it would be hard to understand what was going on and hard to jump right in there. You know, this is something where I feel like you'd almost have to be in it from the beginning. And I think that's another thing that really stunts the growth of a show like Lucha Underground. Hopefully they can get a season 4. Hopefully they can really take the time since their last taping to kind of assess what they need to do to grow. Hopefully they get on a Spanish language network. I think that's big for any kind of Lucha Libre company, even one that's geared toward Americans and English speakers on the LRA network. I think having that support from the Hispanic viewers is big as well. So we'll see what happens. An announcement you would think would be made here soon toward the end of season 3, although there's really no set date that I know of that an announcement needs to be made by. We are reaching the end of my voice and the end of Wrestling Night in America this week. Just a couple reminders. Bound for Glory will be happening in 2 weeks or 3 weeks or whatever it is, and we'll be doing the post show for that. Pat McNeil and I will. We'll be doing the post show for TLC next week. So tune in at about 11 o'clock Eastern time, or when the show goes off the air, when TLC goes off the air, we go on the air. So we'll have that going this week on Raw. Roman Reigns, Braun Strowman, steel cage match. SmackDown has Bobby Roode versus Dolph Ziggler in a Hell in a Cell pay-per-view rematch. Again, final part of Lucha Underground is coming up. More build for Bound for Glory this coming week on Impact Wrestling. And more matches will be announced, I'm sure, as well. Evolve happening right now in East Haven, Connecticut. Matt Riddle versus Fred Yehi. Keith Lee versus Darby Allin and Tracy Williams versus Zack Sabre Jr. for the Evolve title. I'm sure we'll have details of that show on PWTorch.com. ROH is on iPay-Per-View tonight with their Global War Chicago show. Cody, Adam Page, and the Young Bucks take on the Motor City Machine Guns, Jonathan Gresham and Jay White. We've got the IWGP U.S. title on the line, Kenny Omega versus Yoshihashi, Marty Scurll versus Takahashi, and Flip Gordon versus Will Ospreay also taking place as we speak right now. Again, details of that on PWTorch.com later this evening. Folks, thank you for tuning in. Of course, if you're not a VIP member, pwtorch.com/govip. It's got everything. Thank you for tuning in to Wrestling Night in America. I am PW Torch columnist Greg Parks, signing off for this Sunday night.
PW Torch Livecast listeners, I invite you to get even more of what the Torch offers by becoming a PW Torch VIP member. Not only do you get ad-free access to our website, the mobile site, and the desktop site, and access to about 30 years of our archives, including over 1,500 back issues and thousands upon thousands of hours of our audio shows going back to 2004, plus tons of retro radio shows from the 1990s. But you also get over 15 VIP exclusive podcasts per week, in addition to ad-free editions of these PW Torch livecasts throughout the week. So we take the ads out of the PW Torch livecast for VIP members and then give you over 15 other podcasts per week, including what started it all, the Bruce Mitchell Audio Show. I host that with Bruce every weekend, and we spend a couple hours talking about the biggest stories of professional wrestling and wrestling history. It's one of the longest-running weekly pro wrestling podcasts on any subject, and it's one of the main reasons people go VIP and stay VIP. Another is The Fix with Todd Martin. I host that every midweek with Todd, and we get Todd's expertise and opinions every midweek on current events in professional wrestling, not just WWE, but all promotions worldwide, including New Japan. Plus, we end every show with some expert MMA talk from the LA Times columnist and SureDog contributor, Todd Martin. And there's so much more. The Every Single Day Weight Killer Hotline with news updates every single day, Monday through Friday. And every Saturday and Sunday, I do the Ask the Editor format of the Weight Killer Hotline, where I answer VIP member questions in depth. And there's so much more. There's the Wayback Playback with Pat McNeil and Jim Valley, Wrestling Audio Community with Sean Radican, the WWE Future Pass Show with scouting reports on prospects and a look back at the indie career of current stars, the PW Torch East Coast Cast Extended VIP Edition, the retro radio shows. Every Thursday, a new retro radio show from the 90s drops, from the early 90s or the Attitude Era. And last but not least, my in-depth Raw and SmackDown reports. You can get a full chronological rundown of every episode of Raw and SmackDown with my analysis of the show in-depth every Monday night and Tuesday night. So check out details at pwtorch.com/govip. We give you a lot here at the live cast, but there is so much more. The vast majority of our work is for our VIP members, and you can become one today. Go check out details on a subscription at pwtorch.com/govip.